You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS
and Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Thursday, February 27th, 2014. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, David Dayan on why the post office could save the economy, or rather how. Also on the program, SB 1062 in Arizona vetoed. Sorry, Arizonians. You cannot discriminate against gays, unless, of course, you're hiring and firing. And you still have in your back pocket the ability to discriminate against immigrants and brown people. Meanwhile, in Texas, federal judge says the ban on marriage equality unconstitutional. And in Kentucky, federal judge says the ban on marriage inequality unconstitutional. Heads exploding across the country of gay bigots. Also in New York State, Governor Cuomo the Lesser supposedly now warning Republicans not to run an arch conservative, because that could hamper their chances of maintaining control over the New York Senate. That's very kind of him. Meanwhile, in Britain, aided by the NSA, the British government can spy on you and actually has a database of a lot of you Yahoo selfies. And apparently a significant number of those are not safe for work. They're safe for spies, not so much for work. And Keystone activists are gearing up this Saturday. 300 young Americans are going to engage in civil disobedience. Meanwhile, another report out on what we already know, but too many in this country deny, about climate change. President Obama's horrible, horrible appointments to some federal judgeships. And lastly, the IMF comes out with a report that wealth inequality hurts economic growth. They didn't say much about just how immoral it is, but they, that's what the IMF does. All right, we're going to, we got a lot of stuff to cover today, folks, a lot of stuff to cover. And meanwhile, we're just sitting here hunkered down because the jackbooted thugs, the gay jackbooted thugs, they seem to be taking over the country. It's unbelievable.
Please don't harm us. We support you.
Yeah, this is going to be pretty soon. We're going to be doing gay marriages in this office if these jackbooted thugs have their way.
They're already in the hall.
Oh, my God.
Big gay in the homosexual lobby, man.
It's unbelievable. All that and more.
And the Gay Justice League.
Yeah. And all that and more on today's program. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to David Dayan.
cat. I'm so restless, I'm bored as a cat.
We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone, flying down the 405 with a hands-free device. Is the
101. Let's be accurate. It's the 101 freeway.
The 101, the multitasking David Dayan, who, of course, contributes to just about every fine publication that is available online and off. David, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, Sam.
All right. So, you know, you've been talking about this post office, this notion of post office banking for some time. Not too long ago, Elizabeth Warren apparently has been reading your stuff and has promoted this idea. And we'll talk about just the towards the end of the what's happening with the advisory board, I guess, or the Service Board of Governors. But let's talk about this. I've mentioned on this program just sort of the concept of postal banking. But before we get into the 10 ways that how the post office could save the economy and change your life, just give us a broad sort of description of how this would work. And this idea is not particularly new, and in fact, in some respects, has been done in the past.
Yes, indeed. So I've been writing about this for a few years. The reason that it's sort of come back to prominence is that the Inspector General of the Postal Service wrote a white paper endorsing the idea of getting the Postal Service into non-bank financial services. And one of the reasons he did that is he said that it solves a number of problems at once. The biggest problem is that we have one in four households in this country with little or no access to financial services. And that's about 34 million households and maybe 68 million people who simply can't access financial services. Bank branches are pulling out of local communities, particularly low-income communities, left and right, and making it very difficult for these communities to have what is a basic function of modern life, which is access to financial services. Try getting a rental car, try getting health insurance on healthcare.gov, try getting a job in many cases without having a bank account. It's very difficult, and these millions of families lack stable access to such facilities. And what they end up doing is they have to go through all these alternative financial services. And these are things like check cashing stores, pawn brokers, payday lenders. And they're some of the most unscrupulous businesses in the country. And what they do is they charge high premiums for these services because these individuals are basically trapped. They have no other alternative. And what the Inspector General showed is that these services charge in interest and fees, they charge the average family over $2,400 a year. Now, these are families that have an average income of about $25,000 annually. So it's about 10% of their income just to cash their checks, get a small dollar loan if they need it, and all of the basic functions that an ordinary American who makes a little bit more and has access to a bank doesn't even think about.
And
that's the idea, that the post office, which is in 35,000 locations, it's in every zip code in America, it's 58% of those post office branches are in zip codes that have one or less bank branches in them.
Wow.
And so they are well positioned to provide either ATM services, interest-bearing savings accounts, or even small loans, and saving billions of dollars for these families who have no other access, and stabilizing to a modest degree the finances of the Postal Service.
Yeah, all right. Let's talk about, before we go into just the benefits to the the country from adding these services and to individuals. We should also note, and we've talked about this quite a bit on this program, the Postal Service is burdened with a requirement that no other business in the country, no other governmental agency in the country is burdened with. A 2006 law passed by the Republicans, which requires the Postal Service to fund out to a 75-year horizon, basically for postal workers who are not even born yet, has to fund their retirements and their health services.
Benefits,
And and this, of course, has been a real burden on the Postal Service in terms of its operating budget. And we should remind people that the Postal Service does not take any tax dollars to operate. It uses the revenue it gets from stamps.
Yeah.
So this is just another way, with very modest fees that would be involved in this, that they would generate some measure of income, and it would stabilize, like you say, the Postal Service, which everybody counts on. You know, the idea of stopping Saturday delivery caused a huge outcry in closing post offices in small rural locations. So let's go through.
And not just what, everybody counts on, Sam, but the nation's second largest civilian employer, just behind Walmart.
Right.
600,000 people work for the Postal Service at this point, and that's been going quite a bit down because the reaction from the current leadership of the Postal Service to this challenge, this unnecessary artificial crisis, has been to lay off 100,000 workers, plan to lay off 100,000 more, and close locations and try to stop Saturday delivery. There's another way here, and that's to open up another revenue stream through postal banking while trying to get rid of this ridiculous and silly requirement about pre-funding the retirement 75 years out. That would create a post office for the future and provide a really needed service to tens of millions of Americans.
And one more note before we go through your 10 points. We should also say that the post office has very little ability on its own without congressional approval to make any of these moves. And so there is a large... There's plenty of reason to suspect that the reason why the post office has been so handicapped is because there is a lot of money invested in lobbying to privatize as much of the post office as possible. So let's go.
I'm actually going to disagree with that.
All right.
One of the points that the inspector general made in his report is that the post office has the existing authority to explore financial services for the underserved communities.
Oh.
They have it inherently. The post office already creates money orders. They do international money transfers through a program called Dinero Seguro with 9 Latin American countries. They already are doing this, and they have done it in the past, as we alluded to. From 1911 to 1967, there were postal savings accounts, and over 4 million Americans had postal savings accounts that bore a modest amount of interest, and were accounts used at the post office. We can do this through the existing authority of the Postal Service. All it would take is for the Post Office Board of Governors to say, we're going to give this a shot and do a pilot program. Now, we can talk about the Post Office Board of Governors, which actually has 5 vacancies on it right now and is run by Republicans because the President and the Senate have not confirmed any nominees for that position. There are supposed to be 9 people on the Post Office Board of Governors. Right now there are 4, and there are 5 vacancies. 3 of the 4 are Republicans, and pretty hardcore Republicans. The former head of the Kentucky Republican Party, former aide to Pete Domenici, a Republican senator from New Mexico, and a senior advisor to the Carlyle Group. That's 3 of the 4 heads of the Post Office Board of Governors right now, which hires the Postmaster General and creates policy for the Postal Service. So this can get done. It just takes the President actually nominating some people, and he has nominated one nominee, and that's Vicky Kennedy, Ted Kennedy's widow. But he needs to nominate the other 4 members. They need to be receptive to the concept, and they need to fire this Postmaster General who has been using privatization and layoffs to deal with an artificial crisis and hire someone who's committed to new revenue streams and innovative ideas like postal banking.
Well, and we know now that because of the nuking, if you will, of the filibuster on nominees,
exactly.
Now is the time to do
exactly.
it. And it certainly may not be the time a year from now, because the chances of the Democrats holding the Senate are starting to slip away. So let's go through
exactly.
these 10 points right now. The first is you mentioned and you touched on as you set this up was the financial inclusion for low income Americans. You covered a lot of that, but the and I think, you know, you covered it in our sort of our prologue, if you will. But this is desperately needed for, I mean, I'm shocked at that number. One in four Americans, that you said, don't have access?
One in four households.
Wow.
According to the FDIC, which is completely on the level, one in four households lack stable access to financial services. Either they have no bank and they're unbanked, or they are underbanked, which means that they have a bank account, but they still require the use of alternative financial services. And this is why those alternative financial services are such a cash cow.
Right.
Go through any low-income community in America, and you'll see these signs, you know, instant loans today, or check cash is here, or you know, everything like that. This is a very big business, and it's a predatory business. And it's being investigated right now by the Justice Department. And instead of putting forward regulations that these businesses can slip around, why don't we provide some competition?
And your second point, reducing inequality and boosting the economy, you mentioned that the average household spends about $2,400 a year on interest and fees for these alternative financial services. This is essentially, I mean, a tax on low-income Americans if they want to participate in any fashion in the economy.
Exactly. I mean, you've heard the statement that it costs money to be poor.
Yep.
And this is a perfect example of that. It is very lucrative business for these companies which have captive constituency and trap these borrowers into paying these exorbitant rates for normal services that other people don't really have to deal with. So this is an inequality reducer, and that money that is saved presumably would go right back into the economy because these low-income individuals have needs
right.
That are not being met right now. So that this would also have a multiplier effect on the economy.
The
Postal Service is a great employer, and it is a way, traditionally, for low-income and communities of color to lift themselves into the middle class.
And I would imagine, and your third point is stabilizing the post office, which we talked about, but I would imagine you would actually see also the lines at the post office shrink, because then you would have dedicated people there, presumably, who would be working on the banking services. You know, it's not hard to imagine that in some of your larger size post offices, you'd have one window that was specifically for those banking services.
Exactly. And a lot of this could be done offline or online, I should say, but off the lines of the post office,
right.
Through mobile payments. And that's one of the points I made, through ATMs, which they could maybe hook up with another bank's ATM network. There are ways that this would not become a logistical burden for the post office. And it would actually use the post office to make some changes that are very much needed in our payment system and the way in which we pay for things.
Yeah, and you talk in point four, a better way to deliver federal benefits. I didn't know this about Social Security, but talk about the way that Social Security benefits are now delivered.
Social Security benefits, as of, I believe, last year, are not supposed to be delivered through a check. They're supposed to be delivered through either direct deposit or, for people that don't have a bank, a program called Direct Express that the Treasury Department puts out, where they provide people essentially with a debit card and load benefits automatically onto that card. A lot of states do this with things like food stamps or welfare benefits or unemployment insurance benefits. The problem is that they contract the work out to large money center banks who then charge huge fees to people to access their own benefits. If we had a postal service that was allowed to do simple banking services, then you could load your benefits onto the postal card, which is like an ATM or debit card, and the postal card could serve as that repository for an electronic benefits transfer. It would save the government money. It would state governments could contract with the postal service instead of contracting with a bank. And it would increase convenience for numbers of people who receive federal benefits.
And then you bring up in point five, it could provide a savings vehicle for the poor that would be superior to the MIRA. Or am I saying that the right way?
Yeah.
Tell us about it.
Yeah, MIRA is this thing that the president announced in his State of the Union address, which is basically a low-income savings vehicle. It earns similar interest as the thrift savings plan, and it's like a savings bond. It will never go down in income. It can only go up. It's liquid. You can take it from job to job. But all of the benefits of that could also be done through a simple savings account at the post office, which could have the same protections, the same benefits. And unlike MIRA, which has to be rolled over into a Roth IRA and essentially handed over to Wall Street once it reaches a certain level of savings, we would not need to do that with the postal savings account.
Right. And again, it would save people the fees that are associated with that, and it would make the savings less volatile. Number six, bringing immigrants into society.
Well, one thing that's interesting is that if you look back at the postal savings system from 1911 to 1967, the vast majority of people that used it were immigrants who were perhaps used to banking at the post office because this is something that is done worldwide. The postal service right now, as I mentioned, uses this thing called the Dinero Seguro program that does international money transfers to nine Latin American countries. There's a sort of network of postal banking systems worldwide. There are over 60 of them that if the Postal Service went to simple banking, they could hook into, make much more convenient, much cheaper money transfers. It's a huge business in America. I believe $50 million billion dollars in remittances last year. And so this would make the hardships of our immigration system a little bit easier by providing a needed service for immigrant communities and also bring them in to using a federal agency, and maybe that creates some assimilation into U.S. society.
And this is one I hadn't thought about. Number seven, preventing identity fraud. This may inhibit our ability to have LifeLock sponsor the program, but do tell.
Well, we all know with the breach of data at Target that our payment system, particularly for credit and debit cards, is inherently insecure. It uses a magnetic stripe, which is easily copied, and it's just an insecure program. It's one of the worst payment systems in the world. Other countries use a microchip embedded in their debit or credit cards, and a PIN signature, a personal identification number, not a signature, but a PIN. It's a chip and PIN system that is inherently much more secure. That's why half of all the identity fraud in the world happens in the U.S. So banks don't want to upgrade their old magnetic stripe cards. They point the finger at retailers saying, you haven't updated your card readers. Retailers point the finger back at banks. The Postal Service doesn't have these legacy costs, which is really the problem, is that they don't want to upgrade the system. The Postal Service could start immediately with chip and PIN, eventually bringing the retailers over to using chip and PIN and creating a much more inherently secure system for paying money.
And then you talk about modernizing the payment system. Right.
Well, this is associated with this because there's actually no reason that we should be using credit or debit cards at all anymore if we move to a system of mobile payments. There are countries all around the world where you load your money onto your card, it's onto your smartphone, and then you text payments to stores or friends or businesses, and that is the way you pay for things. Kenya has this system, and it's wildly successful. Once again, by starting from scratch, the Postal Service could integrate mobile payments into their systems and create more leverage. There are companies that are trying to do mobile payments in the U.S. They literally have to go from one business to the next, asking them if they'll accept mobile payments. Well, if the Postal Service does it and there are millions of people using it, they have more leverage to force mobile payments into the conversation. It would be just much more effective for people. And, of course, they could do it immediately because if you have a postal savings account and your friend has a postal savings account and you owe him $10, you could text him the money if we went immediately to a mobile payment system. So it's a good idea to modernizing the system in America for paying people, which right now is way behind the curve.
Yeah, way behind Kenya. Let's go
to... way behind Kenya. Way behind Kenya.
I think someone on the right might have a field day with that, though, David, I got to say. I mean, we're going to start to implement those Kenyan payment systems. Let's go to nine, safeguarding personal data.
Yes, the difference between private banks, which, as we all know, like every other business in America seemingly, sells your personal information and data to brokers who then use it to advertise to you, the Postal Service would be governed under the 1974 Privacy Act. And that means that all data and records could not be sold for profit-making, which means that your personal data at the post office in terms of your account number, not your numbers, but your account information, whether you make a loan through the post office, things like that, would not be sold to other data brokers who would then try to, you know, sell you products. This is the main way that leads are generated for predatory lenders. To cut that off, I think, would be a service not only just for personal privacy, but just for stopping predatory lending.
And lastly, ending recessions? Really, David? Really?
This is a little more far afield, but the idea and the concept of postal banking creates a federal account, essentially, a bank account that is federally provided. A federal bank account that the Federal Reserve could give to everyone with a Social Security number would have a better chance of channeling monetary policy through individuals rather than through increasing asset prices through quantitative easing and the various measures that the Federal Reserve uses. For example, if we hit a recession area, the Federal Reserve could say, all right, everyone's postal account now has $300 more in it. However, you have to spend that $300 in the next 2 months. So that's a pure Keynesian stimulus where it's timely and targeted, and it would be just as cheap as undergoing this monetary easing and buying up tens of billions of dollars of mortgage-backed securities in a cockeyed hope to lower mortgage rates that hopefully will bring more mortgage buyers into the economy. I mean, this is a much more direct monetary transmission, and it would have the impact of significantly alleviating recessions because you could get the money directly to the people who need it.
Yeah, and that concept's not so far-fetched. I mean, I'm still old enough to remember the checks that George Bush sent us all, right? Didn't
exactly.
He send us like $250 worth of checks back when they had an inkling there was a recession?
Exactly, but he sent it and said, go do what you want with it. It's the condition of saying, we have $300 in your account, you got to spend it now. That's the condition that creates a timely and targeted stimulus rather than just spraying money and hoping that people don't save it and hoping that people spend it.
Right, and waiting 2 months for the checks to show up, you could do this
right.
immediately. I mean, the precision...
Again, through electronic benefits right. transfer. Yes, there's an efficiency that gets created through postal banking. Yeah.
All right, so lastly, you mentioned that Vicky Kennedy has been nominated to the Board of Governors. That would leave
right.
another 4 vacancies. Is right. it really that hard to find 4 people to nominate for the Postal Board of Governors? I mean, we now know that the logjam, at least in terms of confirming people, is at least theoretically gone. Is it really that hard?
Yeah. I really don't think so. And yet, these have been vacant. The only people currently on the Board of Governors are people who were nominated and confirmed by George W. Bush. So the administration might have had an excuse saying, well, Republicans will block everybody. But with the triggering of the nuclear option, that is no longer an excuse that's valid. So we need to get this going. And I think the IG report, Elizabeth Warren's support, all of the talk around postal banking can maybe push this a little bit. I mean, it took just a couple weeks after the report came out that Vicky Kennedy got nominated. So... maybe we're moving in this direction. Obviously, Vicky Kennedy, I have no idea about her views on postal banking. I don't know that would be a litmus test for people that would be nominated. But to have a Democratic majority in a Democratic administration on a key board, which governs the activities of the second largest civilian employer in the United States, sounds pretty reasonable to me.
Yeah, well, so what, I mean, you know, I love this idea so much. It's awkward how much I love this idea, frankly. and it may be a reflection on just how simple my life is in some respects,
yeah.
that I actually contemplate this at home with the kids. But... What, so
you
what?
Set up little things in the basement, like you put your kid in a bank teller.
I'm just yeah, I'm just playing with the kids, and
the
I'm thinking postal banking.
It.
Why not? but so what? Where's the pressure point? I mean, what is it? What happens next? I mean, we're talking about it. What's the next thing? If someone was to come down and say, David, not only am I going to allow you to continue to write about this and encourage editors to reprint, to publish your pieces, what do you want to happen
right.
next? What's the next thing in there so that I can have something else to contemplate
right.
When I'm playing with the children?
Right. I think there's no question that filling the vacancies on the board is of primary importance. Once you do that, then it's about encouraging the board to hire a new postmaster general and to create the pilot programs that would lead us to postal banking. Now, while we were doing that, you can continue to raise awareness about this idea. The Huffington Post did a poll on postal banking and found plurality support, but a lot of people that don't know anything about the idea. But they also found that 1 in 3 people, if offered postal banking services, would use them, which is a huge untapped market here. So it's raising the awareness, and it's putting forward the mechanisms that can actually get this to happen without having to rely on Congress. This is the key. This is what changes this from a nice idea that you and I can talk about to something that can actually happen.
Are there any interest groups who are promoting this? I mean, is there a chance?
Well,
that is another
issue, is that encouraging interest groups, because there are very, very few, if none, right now who have gone out and said, yes, the post office should deliver simple banking services. The Appleseed Network, which is a public interest law group with locations all over the country, has been in favor of the practice, but they're an outlier. You see very little other movement, and I'm not sure I understand why. I did see a Daily Kos put out an endorsement of it. They petitioned their list to say to get the politicians to endorse postal banking. But this should be a something, if the president is serious about reducing inequality, here's a chance and opportunity to do
right.
so. And in addition, there's an election year coming up, and this could be an issue that to be asked of primary candidates when they're seeking support from voters. I mean, there are all sorts of applications here, and I wish that the progressive movement, such as it is, would get on board with this concept that has so many great applications. I mean, I called it the Swiss Army knife of public policy. It has so many different potential beneficial uses for people that I consider it a no-brainer.
You know, if you're a member of Move On or the PCCC or one of those organizations that rely on feedback from its memberships as to what issues they're going to begin to advocate for, this is one of those ways where you can maybe an influence of a group like that would be very helpful, I think.
Absolutely.
David Dayan, I'm going to let you get back to driving. I know you're probably in a hurry. You've got to continue that loop around Los Angeles that you do on a daily basis.
In the time we've been on, I have moved 0.3 miles. So I am on my way. And here we go.
Well, glad we could at least be a distraction as you're driving.
A welcome distraction. Yeah.
There you go. David Dayan, thanks so much for your time today, buddy.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
See ya.
God, I love that idea. I love it.
I agree.
I really do. It's really, when I catch myself thinking about it at home, I really say I've got to do something with my life. But I love this idea. I love it.
Both things are true. It's not mutually exclusive.
That's also true. The idea can be great, and I need to get a hobby or something.
Yes.
But did you hear the passion which Dayan speaks of it?
Dayan also may need to get a life.
That's true. But he's busy. He's always right. I mean, you should, folks, you should check out, Dayan's got a Tumblr. Let's put that on our site, a link to his Tumblr, because it is basically the clearinghouse for all the links of everything he's writing. He's constantly writing great pieces.
Click on his name in the blog post. It will take you to his Tumblr.
Wow. Now, where did you learn to do that technology? I want to talk about this just briefly before we go into the better half of the program, where I will take your phone calls at 646-257-3920, and I will take your IMs as I fire up my IM machine. Story out in the Times. Governor Cuomo is running for re-election. Of course, you know, this is a slightly New York-centric, but in many ways it is not, because if there is a greater problem with the Democratic Party, I am not aware of it. The Democratic Party, mainstream Democratic Party two-step, which of course is, we're going to be good on social issues, and that's in many respects a recent phenomena over the past 5 or 6 years, where the Democratic Party has provided a full-throated endorsement of a woman's right to choose, coming back from the brink of those days where we have to be a little bit sensitive to people who really think that women are chattel and don't have, and where the Democratic Party was equally as weak on issues like marriage equality. Like, you know, we can't, you know, it's okay to be gay, but you don't want to make them actually have the same rights as the rest of us. That has changed. And at least there's been attempts. And in New York State, Governor Cuomo deserves deserves credit for what he's done in terms of some type of sensible gun control. But then the flip side of that is, and then what we're going to do is we're basically going to kowtow to Wall Street. We are going to continue with austerity. We are going to promote wealth inequality through taxation. And Governor Cuomo is the poster child for that type of Democratic politician. And here is a guy who wants to be, who really wants to have a margin of reelection. And if you need any evidence that this is the way that politicians think, you merely have to look across the Hudson to what Chris Christie was doing to run up his electoral tally. Governor Cuomo wants to do the same thing. And he wants to do so by appealing to Republicans and to the wealthy in such a way that makes it clear that he is on their side, that he knows he has Democratic support all wrapped up, and he's going to continue with his, he's going to put former Governor Pataki, really, in my personal experience of Pataki, which granted was only an hour, sitting on a panel with him on the Dylan Radigan show, sitting there during the breaks, hearing what he had to say, is an odious individual who was mocking the notion that Medicare was important to people, as he was also talking in the breaks of his massive farm on overlooking one of the Great Lakes, I think it was, and just literally mocking the idea of Medicare being important. And Pataki was put on a panel that came up with a scheme to basically cut property taxes across the board, but punish less wealthy counties and municipalities by saying basically, well, we'll cut your taxes, but within 2 years, you've got to begin to cut your services to people. And we see it when it comes to universal pre-K. We see it in terms of his lackluster support for instituting some type of public financing system for campaigns. We see it in him putting up roadblocks for the idea of allowing municipalities local home rule when it comes to setting a minimum wage. And this story in the Times, and you know, take this with a grain of salt, because one never knows how these things are spinning, and one doesn't know necessarily what's in the mind of Governor Cuomo. He's got $33 million in his war chest. And he may or may not run in 2016. I'm sure he would like to, but he sees that that Clinton is a force that he couldn't necessarily reckon with. But according to the New York Times, he is putting out the word to Republican state senators, to Republican donors, to Republican operatives, don't nominate Rob Astorino. He's a Westchester, which is a county, a very wealthy county, in, just outside of New York City. He's a Westchester County executive. Don't put your support behind this guy. Because if you do, I am going to run against him and paint him as a hardcore conservative who is against marriage equality and against any type of sensible gun control. And that is going to hurt your down-ticket races. Now, just a little bit of backstory here. The Democrats were set to take over the Senate, New York State Senate. They've had the assembly for a long time. And New York State politics are nasty, just nasty. But they were set to take over the Senate. And Cuomo at the time said, look, I'm not getting involved in this. The Republicans now control the Senate with the help of five, I think it is, supposed independent Democrats, who are essentially, you know, Joe Lieberman's in many respects. They caucus essentially with the Republicans. Cuomo wants to maintain that Republican Senate because they are much more amenable to his tax schemes. And so there are three explanations as to why he might be doing this. One is that he may be simply trying to muddle the Republican race in hope of gaining a stronger margin of victory. Possible. Others may speculate that Cuomo thinks that Astorino is a better candidate than he could be. But three is this notion that he does not want the Republicans to lose the state Senate, control of the state Senate, so that he can continue his essentially moderate Republican, old school Republican agenda of cutting taxes and imposing austerity. Now, like I say, it's very difficult to know specifically, you know, what's up, because a lot of this stuff is sourced anonymously. One Republican senator who asked not to be named, he told me that if Astorino runs, he's going to pound the hell out of him and talk about guns and gays, and it won't be pretty, and it will hurt all of us. One official said the governor had indicated he would refrain from such a polarizing campaign if the Republicans ran a candidate who, in his view, was more moderate. In addition to offering his commentary on Mr. Astorino, Mr. Cuomo has also tried to woo Republican donors and others who might be inclined to support a Republican last month. And on Monday, remember, he's got $33 million. There's no way he's going to lose this election. Never in a million years. Last Monday, the governor talked up his record to business leaders at the Harvard Club in Manhattan. Kenneth G. Langone.
Name sound familiar.
He who threatened a bishop in
I'll tell you what, Father, I gotta meet with Cuomo soon, but if you keep talking about the goddamn poor people, you will be hearing from me again, my friend.
That's right.
I promise you this.
It would be a real shame. It would be a real shame if that cathedral didn't have all the pretty colored windows, didn't it?
He said that to the bishop about the Pope.
Yes.
He was talking about the Pope.
Yes.
Like, please, can you tell the Pope to stop talking about this
thing? Yeah, it'd be a real shame if you just had natural light coming into that that cathedral, wouldn't it? So this is what's going on in New York. And why this is important beyond New York is that in many respects, this is going to be a template. Look, if the governor of New York can get away with saying, or get away with machinations, saying that I want a Republican-controlled Senate so that I can get my austerity measures and my tax-cutting measures passed through, so that I can keep universal pre-K from being fully funded, so that I can keep municipalities that want to raise the standard and provide a living wage for their workers. If I can do that, then a Democrat running nationally can do anything. That's why this is important nationally. And it really, really, really gets my goat. This is like the antimatter to my enthusiasm about postal banking. All right, folks, we're going to take a break. We're going to head into the funner half of the program, wherein we will take your phone calls and we will hear about these jackbooted thugs who are just forcing bakers to bake cakes. I actually saw a story. I don't think I have it in my stack, but where someone was defending this religious freedom stuff, and great piece. Maybe I should have him on instead of just talking about it, but by Ian Milhauser in Think Progress, about the historical basis of citing the Bible for discrimination. Not something that you probably aren't aware of, but we will talk about that in the program. Also, Keystone. There's also. I was just talking to somebody about New York politics the other day. There's also a plan to take that, basically that tar sands oil, heat it up in Albany. Apparently it comes in from Canada, and then put it on heated ships and drive it down the Hudson. One leak.
I wish I could
leak
do a...
And 30 years of work to save the Hudson River literally down the tubes. In a moment. In a heartbeat. That Cuomo thing really gets under my skin. All right, we got to take a break. We'll be back. 646-257-3920. 646-257-3920 is the number. If you want to IM us, you can do so at Majority FM. See you in a second. Oh, support the program by becoming a member today and buy the stuff. Just go.
Just go.
Satan, I will pay.